back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Great to have your company today. Well, in the second hour of today's show, we're going to be running through some more very, very interesting news stories. And I would like to actually lead with some Australian news. And as usual, most of our Australian news tends to be the nanny state, the unfolding tendency of our government to interfere using force, using laws, using essentially the threat of violence to purportedly make us better citizens. And I really want to deconstruct that whole concept, that whole psychological, intellectual construct, that the idea of using force to make people behave better. Of course, a lot of people think, yes, well, discipline, you know, and they think about, you know, the history of discipline, and it does involve, you know, spanking children and putting people in prison as a punishment. But if you think about the enlightened tradition of modern civilization, and going right back, say, 300 or 400 years, the trend has actually been away from that. And the insights of our philosophy and the more advanced aspects of our civilization have been to say, well, actually, that does not improve human behavior. In fact, that entrenches human behavior in a cycle of negativity and violence. And the way forward is through better education, through freedoms, through tolerance, and essentially through love. You know, that's the way forward. But what we see in this phase that we're in now is a kind of a backsliding back into a kind of barbaric, feudalistic system of control by violence, control by threats. And every time a new law is passed that curbs your behavior, that is essentially what it is. No matter how they couch it, no matter how they try to, you know, pretty it up, you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig, okay? So let's just run through a couple of things here from our recent news. King's Cross drinks ban to curb violence. Patrons in King's Cross venues will not be able to buy shots, doubles or alcopops after midnight on weekends under tough new licensing conditions proposed by the New South Wales government. 8 conditions will be imposed after an audit found King's Cross pubs and clubs were seriously breaching responsible service of alcohol guidelines. Premier Barry O'Farrell says the audit raised serious concerns. Pubs and clubs are not serving alcohol responsibly. He says under the new conditions, no one will be able to buy more than 4 drinks at a time after 11 p.m, and venues will have to stop selling drinks an hour before closing time. And marshals will patrol venues after 11 p.m. to make sure drunk patrons are not being served. Now, I've never heard the use of the word marshal in this context before. I know after 9/11 they introduced air marshals on planes. Normally, most clubs and bars and pubs in Sydney have security already. They have a huge proliferation of security, so much so that I don't go out anymore because I don't like big gorillas walking around staring at me and looking into my eyes when I'm having a chat with a friend over a beer. I find it so invasive and so obnoxious that I just don't go to those places anymore. And already, if you're having a drink after about 9 p.m., they remove all the glass and they give you plastic cups, like we're little children and we get little plastic cups. This is already going on. It's already gone that far. But now they want to take it further. You know, you're not allowed to buy more than 4 drinks. So if you're out with some friends and you want to buy a round of drinks, sorry, no, we can't trust you to buy more than 4 drinks. Okay, so on the one hand, they're treating people like children, like totally you know, incompetent, irresponsible children. And yet these are tax-paying consumers in our society who have supposedly all of the rights of a citizen in our society, but selectively all of those rights are rolled back through state legislation implemented through the corporate structures of hotels and bars. To me, I find the whole trend, and you've really got to look at it globally, you've got to look at it from a macro perspective, the whole trend is just totally unacceptable, and it will lead to more violence and not less. That's what I believe. Of course, the reason they're doing it is because of violence. The reason these new laws have been brought in King's Cross is because an 18-year-old was stabbed a couple of weeks ago and died. Actually, he wasn't stabbed, he was punched. Anyway, he died, okay? So yeah, their approach to this is to say, well, oh, we're gonna bring in new laws. We're going to stop you from doing this. We're going to stop you from doing that. We're going to curb your behavior. And of course, our laws come with threats. They involve fines, but they can also ultimately involve arrest and prison. And of course, prison is a place of violence. Prison is a place where people are regularly beaten, abused, stabbed, and killed. So the whole concept and construct that our society is currently moving towards is one based on tyranny, tyrannical, totalitarian, top-down control. George, what is your opinion on this?
Yeah, I think that these matters can be handled differently. I might just, I'm not supporting what the government is doing. Let me just give a little bit in the direction. The government overreacts and acts wrongly, but with the plastic cups, what's happened is after a few drinks are down in these particular areas, they start throwing glasses at each other. And one of the major causes of one of the major problems at St. Vincent's Hospital, which is the closest one there, emergency, is people being what they call glassed. So a lot of facial injuries are occurring because people are being glassed. So plastic cups come in there. King's Cross has been a notorious place for many, many decades now. Government overreacts. Now, there has to be some sort of middle ground. I would suggest that the pubs be shut at, say, 11 o'clock at night, not this 24-hour business. If you're a tourist and you're expecting a 24-hour food and liquor service and you're staying in a hotel and you're a tourist, then fine, you'll be able to get services within your hotel itself. If you want to entertain people, you can do that. But the pubs and the almost beer halls that occur up in that area are fairly notorious. There's a lot of violence in that area. A lot of people have died in that area, apart from that the tragedy of that boy who was punched and unfortunately hit his head in a bad way when he hit the ground. But that's regrettable, but it doesn't forgive the person who did that. So there are reasons behind things, but government is ham-fisted. There are two-edged swords in everything that government does, and it's ham-fisted in the way it acts. We had in Australia some years ago a situation where the road and traffic authorities couldn't collect parking fines. People would just go, forget it, come and get it. No. So if they didn't have money to pay the fines or they couldn't garnish your wages or some other way, they decided in their wisdom, I tell you what we'll do, we'll threaten them and we'll jail them. That'll make them pay their fines. So a young chap called Jamie Partlick was locked up in Sydney, put into a jail, and we'll teach them a lesson. So he gets thrown into the what they call the main population in major prison here in Sydney. And, of course, the boy was killed. So, we'll have to redress that. So we're not going to jail people for not paying parking and other fines anymore. So it's a situation where things go in a direction, then they're reversed. So it's the marshals running through the...
what is a marshal? There was no explanation of what a marshal is. Right. Can you explain it?
Yeah, under the New South Wales Police Act, there are people can be appointed as special constables or acting police and such. So it would be basically a little bit more authority up from a security guard. And a lot of these pubs and clubs and such around Sydney, you're now finding like 6 and 8 people on the doorstep. And King's Cross also has a drug issue, has a girl issue up there. So there are other facets, and gambling is not as much as it was. So there's a lot of activity in that particular region.
Can I just make a couple of points, yeah. George? Well, one thing about the security industry, there were some studies done a couple of years ago, and it found that over 60% or something of the employees in these security companies had criminal backgrounds, that they're basically hiring criminals. And, you know, not surprisingly, they're getting involved in a lot of violence. A lot of the violence that we are seeing in pubs and clubs is actually provoked by the criminal element within the security industry. I mean, the type of people that are being hired and the type of people that go for these sort of jobs are people who like a bit of a brawl. You know, they're huge, beefed up, you know, testosterone, you know, giant gorillas, and they you know, they do get frustrated and bored towards the end of the night, and you know, every week somewhere in Sydney there is some kind of brawl with security. And of course they provide a target as well. If a guy comes out of a pub a little bit tipsy, and you know, maybe he's a little bit rowdy, you know, and he sees this big gorilla standing there, it's gonna enrage him. And this is what we've got. I believe we've got a cycle of violence which is actually being fueled by the very measures that they're taking to curb the violence.
Yeah, this Marshall situation could cause that problem as well. What am I with the King's Cross situation? There are a few security companies operating up in that area. There's a lot of security guards in that area. It's almost door to door down the main street there, with strip joints and other places like that. So, and then the alcohol outlets and so. So what's happened there is they're all on radio. And the different little companies or different groups might be handling two or three doors. They're all linked up on radio. So if something really goes down somewhere, the deal is that they leave two guys on the door and the rest of them go up to that area there. And it's usually just up the street. The whole strip is like 400 yards. So they'll all belt in there and see what's going on and try and sort it out. So they try and sort the problems out by numbers. Now, there's a lot of CCTV footage out concerning challenges on doors. They've come to put cameras on the doors so as to make sure the guards are protected, they're being challenged. So I've looked at a lot of footage there, and the guards are being, or the security guys are being challenged. In Bondi Junction, which is I live in Bondi area, we've got three pubs in the Junction area, a couple up further in the little suburb called Charing Cross, and a pub and some other outlets down in Bondi itself in the main drag. Now, Bondi Junction used to be a quiet little peaceful middle-class area. So we've got three raging pubs there at the moment, and you've got at least six or eight guys on the doorstep. And this is a suburban area, and the pubs are shutting early at night, and they're going to pull back the hours again. But they've got problems there. There are police camped in the street there. And this is a suburb. This is not even King's Cross. And King's Cross is way out past all this. A lot of stabbings and shootings and carryings on and overdoses and that have taken on. King's Cross is a notorious area. And quite frankly, if you want to go and have a peaceful drink because you're a nice, upstanding citizen and you pay your taxes and you're entitled to have a little corner of to share with your friends, don't go there. So the answer is you don't go there, right?
George, I'm going to have to cut you off, unfortunately. That is a really, really important point. I'd just like to briefly mention the introduction of gambling has dramatically affected the quality of entertainment in Sydney. You're with Truth News Australia. We'll be right back after this break. Stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
To stand by you.
Is the only light we see. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Today we are going through some international news. Of course, we've been covering there the breaking story with Julian Assange, and if anything comes up during the rest of this hour, we'll certainly bring it to you. I've got some more Australian news to bring to you, and I want to play you a little bit from the report that George and I did on the Syrian protest that was held here in Sydney about 10 days ago. And it was quite a substantial protest, quite substantial numbers, would you say, George, turned out?
Yeah, I'd say about 3,000 to 4,000, as we both said, actually, independently there.
Excellent.
I was most impressed by the people. There's a bit behind that, and there's a couple of false flag or diversionary events have been brought up in YouTube and through the media and that, which I can go into if we've got the time.
Well, what I might do actually is I'll play some of the interviews and coverage that we have. You can watch the video of that on the site if you go to truthnews.com.au. It'll be in the show notes from today's show, but it's all up on YouTube as we speak. So I'll just kick off some of the clip there. And if you want to interrupt, George, or make any comment, just let me know.
Thanks.
This is a protest in support of Syrian government and Bashar al-Assad against Western intervention.
People are very ignorant. People in this country are very ignorant about what's going on in Syria. That's understandable. That's not a crime in itself. But what is not acceptable is the unethical use of this ignorance. All of those people from Hillary Clinton through the media, through all sorts of silly people in this country. Those people saying Assad must go. They have no ethical basis to make that sort of claim. They haven't understood that it's the foundation of the post-colonial era. It's the foundation of human rights, that a people have the right to self-determination, and the Syrian government is only for the Syrian people and no one else. We see the result across the border in Iraq. What a tragedy in Iraq. What a great tragedy in Iraq. But we can't allow that to happen in your country. So I'm here just to say, as a non-Syrian Australian, at least some of us here are in solidarity with you today. Thank you for coming along.
This is Harrowood Fenton reporting for Truth News Australia. I'm down here in the city. It's the 5th of August 2012, and there is a large protest here in support of President Bashar al-Assad against Western intervention, against the media manipulation. This has been brewing. There's already been one previous protest that occurred a couple of months ago, I believe. This one is quite large. I'd say there's probably at least 3,000 to 4,000 people marching today.
I'm just going to pause it there. I'm having a little trouble with the YouTube app. I think it might have just having a little memory problem with my computer. I'm just going to reboot my browser. George,
you comment on a couple of things there?
Yeah. Okay. Any comments
right.
you'd like to make
yeah,
on that?
The gentleman you heard speaking just before Harold was a chap called Tim Anderson. Now, Anderson, Dunn and McAllister were arrested in 1978 and charged with the Hilton bombing in Sydney, which we've discussed previously on this show, and I alluded to it again today. Now, the reality of the situation is that an aspect of the intelligence community in Australia had planted the explosive and didn't expect the detonation when it took place. There's a little bit behind that story there. As I said, I was the first down there at that time. I came in. I was actually staying in the hotel, and I was allowed to stay in the hotel with the press corps. And the story was that Desai, the Indian Prime Minister at that time, who was in Sydney for the CHOGM conference, the Commonwealth Heads of Government conference, was the target for some political reason. Now, Anderson, Dunn and McAllister were allegedly part of a group called Anandamaga, which was against the Desai government. So, therefore, they did it. It's a bit like running into the theatre and grabbing Oswald. So it was one of these situations where Anderson, Dunn and McAllister were locked up. A lot of support came outside there, and some very, very good lawyers came forward, and eventually these people were released. Tim Anderson, of course, has been slightly jaded by the system over the years. He's running a legal service in Sydney in one of the lower socioeconomic areas, and he's helping a lot of people. So he's been jaded with the system, but in a way, in his he's helping also a lot of people. So he spoke out there. That was the man that you heard speaking there. So, yes,
and of course, he's a very articulate speaker. I would have loved to have heard more from him, but of course, the Hilton bombing really is the most significant terrorist attack that Australia has ever experienced. It's the only bombing that's ever occurred on our sovereign territory. Is that correct?
No, there was one in. Sorry to do this to you.
Really, there was another.
There was one in the Israeli consulate in William Street in Sydney.
Is that right?
And there was allegedly one had been found undetonated in the Yugoslav consulate in Melbourne. But the one in Sydney has a story behind it, as the Hilton one has a story behind it. And I mentioned previously a couple of consular deaths in Sydney, the Greek consul in Darling Point, and I think it was a Czechoslovakian. I'd interviewed them up there. I think it's tied in with that, in an area called Dover Heights. That was really a professional hit, the one up in Dover Heights. We haven't got much time, but I could describe the way it was done, and that was the most professional hit in Australia. And it was a direct action there.
Tell you what I'm going to do, George. I've got YouTube back up now.
Yep.
Just in the time we've got, I'm just going to play a little more from our coverage, and I'm going to try and get in the two short interviews that we did. Just please bear with me if I have to fiddle with a bit to get to that point.
Okay, I'm here with Najia at the Syrian protest here outside the Department of Foreign Affairs. Najia, what would you like to say today?
I would just like to say one thing to the Australian government. The Syrian president, 75% of the people elected him, and only the Syrian people can impeach him. I just want to say another thing, that Barack Obama, Erdogan, back off, hands off Syria. We just need to raise our voice, and we're sticking with the president.
Now, what 75%
of the people elected him.
What I can see from the gathering here today is that Bashar al-Assad seems like a very popular leader.
He is a very popular leader. He's a doctor. He studied in England. He doesn't kill his people. We've got militants in Syria. They're terrorists. They're not Free Syrian Army. They're killing people. I've got my family back home. They're kidnapping people. They're killing people. After they kill them, they amputate their body parts. And they send them home to their parents without heads, without arms. Now we're going to put a stop to it. We want him to stay in power. That's my message.
I'm Tony Backhouse. I joined the Greens in 2005. And one of the reasons I joined the Greens was because of their stance on the Iraq War and their policy of peace and non-violence, which is a platform of the New South Wales Greens Constitution. I've just left the Greens on Thursday night at 3 minutes to midnight because of their stance on supporting UN NATO intervention into Syria, which I see as akin to starting World War III. So I find that totally hypocritical, and that's why I've left.
So, Wayne, was this a recent announcement? Sorry, Tony. was this a recent announcement of the Greens? Because I wasn't even aware of it myself.
I notified my local group on 3 minutes to midnight on Thursday night because this rally was coming up. And not just because of that, but because of what was happening in Aleppo.
Is this a federal policy of the Greens now? Is this an official, Green policy?
Foreign policy to support UN intervention has been a position taken by Bob Brown initially, and now by Christine Milne and Adam Bent. It is basically they're falling into line with the European Greens position, from my understanding. And that the same went with Libya. I nearly resigned when Gaddafi's family's house got bombed, and that killed Gaddafi's granddaughter and a number of other family members. And this week I saw that Leon Panetta has actually threatened Assad's family. And I thought, this is just ridiculous. I can't support this. I mean, my party is supporting a military intervention, basically, in Syria against their own constitution.
Okay, that's our report there. George, just very briefly, we've got about 30
yep.
seconds. What do you think this says about the Greens? And this is a really important interview here with a man who's left the party.
I think the Greens float along on fad and fashion, unfortunately. I'll probably get down for that one. But unfortunately, I've seen parties in Australia, the Democrats and the Greens, taking up fashionable positions, unfortunately.
And they're repudiating their own constitution. Look, yeah. we're going to break. I want to talk about that when we come back. I think it's really important. We've got to analyse this. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away.
She said she learned the hard way. Said she wanna spare the children. She said don't give a say your soul away, 'cause all that you have is your soul. So don't be tempted by the shiny apple. Don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice. Hunger only for a world of truth. 'Cause all that you have is your soul.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Hereward Fenton. It's great to be with you today. We're running through the latest news, the latest stories affecting the world, affecting Australia, affecting you. And of course, this is alternative media. This is about people taking control again. So if there's anything you'd like to say, please do call us. I've got the call-in numbers. I'll just get those up again in a second. I had to reboot my browser a second ago, so I have actually lost that from my screen. But we do actually welcome calls if you've got something you'd like to talk about. If you'd actually like to talk about the Syrian protest, if you were involved in it, please give us a call. The number is 1-300-153-372 if you're calling from Australia. And if you're calling from the US, the number is 512-646-1984. Now, George, we were just talking there about the Australian Greens, and I've just got a data sheet here from Wikipedia yeah. on the Australian Greens. And, of course, you know, the context here is that, as we've seen, the Greens are now endorsing military intervention in Syria. So let's find out a bit more about them. The Australian Greens were formed in 1992. The origins can be traced to the environmental movement in Australia and the formation of the United Tasmania Group, one of the first Green parties in the world, which first ran candidates in the 1972 Tasmanian state election. Coordination between environmentalist groups occurred in the 1980s with various protests, including one of the most significant environmental campaigns in Australian history against the proposed damming of the Franklin River and the subsequent flooding of Lake Pedder. Key people involved in these campaigns included the party's former leader Bob Brown and current leader Christine Milne. So, yeah, background there, of course, the core environment movement, the anti-logging campaigns and the anti-damming campaigns. What do you think about that? Those campaigns, George? Were you for or against the big dams back in the 80s?
No, I'm definitely pro-environment.
Okay.
But anti-green, so it might take me a little bit of time to explain that.
Sure.
They're opportunistic in what they do. Certainly with the forests in Australia, with the dams and that. No, I'm definitely into protecting those environments. And there's a lot of political corporate vandalism that was halted at that time. Now, what's happened with the Greens, they've been a minority party, and at the moment they're sitting on effectively crossbenches, because the government in Australia, the Labor Party, is holding government by one person, which is why they covered the situations. The information was leaking out about Slipper, the Speaker of the House, and Thompson.
Improper Slipper with his improper relationships with a young man, young staff member, and of course Craig Thompson, improper management of union funds.
There's a bit behind both those stories, but they were very loath to protect. Very loath not to protect these people. The other thing that has happened also is that our Prime Minister has had information leaked out concerning what she was doing while working for a law firm in Sydney. So these three events have been put aside.
Getting back to the Greens, if we can just focus on the Greens, and you know, what is this? The fact that they are now endorsing military intervention in another country. This seems to really have gone far away from protecting rivers and forests. What we're seeing here is some kind of political evolution. And, of course, the Greens have soaked up all the votes that used to go to other marginal, well, not really even marginal, the third parties like the Democrats, which have virtually disappeared. There was a party called the Democrats, which was the major third party in Australia. It basically evaporated at the same time as the Greens took off. I mean, do you think that basically the Greens are just now occupying that position? It's just that every modern democracy seems to need to have two major parties and one minor party that holds the balance. That seems to be the way our system works.
Unfortunately, that's the case in Australia, Britain, America and other places. I would much rather see a lot of small parties, and there needs to be some sort of consensus to arrive at a conclusion. The Greens are wrong in their perceptions concerning the US and NATO. The bodies in Syria allegedly attempting to liberate the people there are actually the enemy of the state there. The stories breaking through the media concern oil pipelines. I can do a whole show on that if you want. But the oil pipeline story that's coming out is wrong.
I'm really interested in the oil pipeline. I mean, let's leave the Greens. I mean, obviously, the fact is this party has betrayed its own constituency. Because I can I'll just finish up on this topic, because most of the people who joined the Greens are anti-war. I mean, the Greens' position in the Iraq War was against it, right? And the Greens have soaked up the allegiance of a lot of people that go back to the 1960s who were protesters and hippies in the 1960s. Yeah. That is the core constituency of the Greens. But by adopting this, you know, the world's policeman position, supporting intervention, you know, us basically being satellites of the world's policemen, the US, and using these horrible Orwellian phrases like the international community, you know, cannot tolerate this terrible country doing these things, so we're going to have a humanitarian intervention with our love bombs. This type of thing has completely betrayed any justification for those who believe in freedom, justice, truth, and peace. The Greens really appear now to be merely a puppet, just the shell of an organisation that basically the hand up inside it is the hand of corporatism driving it. Can we agree on that?
Yes, it's lost its foundations, as Tony Backhouse was saying in that interview. It's almost turned into a committee where we've got situations where a camel is a horse designed by a committee. So they're off. They're wrong on who is attempting to liberate Syria, who these people are, what the liberation is actually about. The oil pipeline issue.
Now let's move on with the oil pipeline. Right. So what is it that you can enlighten us there on that topic?
Well, through Afghanistan, there were three pipelines that actually converge at one point. There's one coming through from the Caspian Sea, which breaks into two pipelines. Now, through the media, through the internet, there's a lot of disinformation concerning the pipelines, which diverts the story concerning the control of India and China, and even Japan, but India and China particularly, who are urgently in need of oil, and the pipeline which runs through Turkey and is going back through the edge of Israel, which gives Turkey and Israel the control of a particular pipeline that comes through to the Red Sea area. Now, that is not the main pipeline. Now, the stories being released indicate that there aren't any pipelines going through through Pakistan or through India to China. That is not true. And even I was looking at the web the internet the other night, and there are maps on there that have had the a lot of these pipelines wiped off the map. Now, the information given brings arguments concerning the control of pipelines, and of course they spin into Zionism. Again, that's a really big issue. Just because someone has a Jewish name and it works in the banking industry doesn't mean that that bank is controlled by Zionism. The same with the pipelines and what's happening there. Now, you've always got arguments of the Masons, the Jesuits, the Zionists. All right, now I think they've gone down too far down these paths, and I'm sure these organisations would love to have the control that's been apportioned to them. CFR and other organisations and other think tanks are more concerned than these issues. So the argument put forward concerning the pipelines and the control of oil through there is not correct.
Syria, so now, which argument specifically was this? Can you actually just detail the actual argument?
Concerning that the situation in Syria is to bring about a destabilising to prevent Syria from becoming a client state of Iran, and a pipeline being run through some of their territory for Iranian crude to be sold. So
is there currently a pipeline that does run through Syria?
No, not at the moment, but one is being planned, and my information is that one will be built. So the argument was that Putin had gone down to Israel, spoke to Netanyahu and the controlling elements down there, concerning the flow through this one. But the argument there was that Putin can actually switch off the oil going into Israel. So it wasn't Israel calling in Putin. Putin went down there and told them this can be switched off.
So. But we are now seeing Israeli speculation over an Iran strike, and they're talking about a timetable of weeks rather than months. So, of course, Syria and Iran are interconnected. We've seen this escalation of the situation in Syria reaching now some breaking point. At the same time, we're now seeing the Israeli hawks saying that Israel will attack Iran. And they're saying that they're going to do it in late September, early October. They're giving the Americans till the 25th of September. It says here an article in Mariv, Israeli publication, said that Netanyahu has set a deadline of 25 September for Obama to clearly state that the US will take military action. They're actually expecting the US to do it, but if the US doesn't do it, the Israelis are saying, we're going to take out Iran. I mean, you know, to me, the situation is so out of control. It is so extreme. It is so evil that almost any conspiracy theory seems to me justified, because the situation has got that bad. We are just heading to break. I want to cover more of this situation with the impending crisis with Iran. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm with George Georges. Stay with us. Don't go away. Important show.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Okay, well, we've got about 15 minutes left in the show. I actually want to focus on something that may be considered controversial, and I may end up with the jackboot of the Australian consumer watchdogs smashing down my door, because I'm going to actually bring up a subject which for which people have got into trouble talking about. And we've all obviously covered it on this show before. That the topic is the cancer cure known as black salve. Now, black salve has been used around the world by people to heal skin cancers. And there are many, many testimonials on the internet that you can find. And I discovered one. I was actually Googling on black salve in Thailand. I was just curious to know. And I found an amazing little article by a guy called Bill O'Leary, who actually runs a boating business down in Phuket in Thailand. And he's got this story on his webpage with photographs and a complete narrative of how he was able to heal his skin cancer right on the tip of his nose with black salve. And look, as I said, people have received warning letters and threats from the government simply for talking about this. I may be next in line, but let me just put a disclaimer right now. This is not an advertisement. I'm not advertising. I'm talking about information that I found on the internet. And I think it was an interesting story. And gee, you know, it's a herbal ointment. It's a natural herbal ointment. For some reason, the government doesn't want you to know that. And they are using any device they can to try and suppress the information. And guess what? That just makes me think it's all the more interesting, and that makes me want to talk about it more. Interesting dynamic. What do you think about that, George? Just briefly get your opinion on that dynamic of when the government says, well, you're not allowed to talk about this. That's exactly what we want to talk about, isn't it?
Yeah, we should. Nothing should be taboo. We should be like little children asking why all the time. We tend to lose it as we get older. The black salve, I think, is what used to be called colloidal silver. Some years ago, and that was
It's a little different, George. It's not colloidal silver. No, it's actually, I can tell you exactly what's in it, and I'll get that up, but do keep talking.
Well, colloidal silver was used for these surface matters in the past, carcinogens and such. So I don't know what's actually in the black salve.
Okay, I'll tell you what's in it right now. Here we go. The formula has evolved over time, and the current ingredients are zinc chloride, chaparral, not sure what that is, the scientific name for that is Laria mexicata, bloodroot, scientific name Sanguinaria canadensis, galangal root. Now, of course, that's well known in Thailand. That's actually an important cooking ingredient in Southeast Asia, galangal root, alpinia. Ooh, I can't even pronounce that. Officinarium. Okay. Graviola leaf. Glycerin. And dimethyl sulfoxidine. Okay. That's what's in it. And it's a black ointment. And you basically just smear it on anything that's a skin cancer. Now, according to the official explanation of how it works, is that it will single out cancerous cells and essentially burns them out. And in the story from the man here, Bill O'Leary, who used it, he shows you with many photographs. You can see in the beginning he's got this big sore on his nose. And, you know, this is not a guy who just follows fads. He went to all the doctors. He went to specialists. He had a biopsy done. He followed procedure, right? And he had the biopsy done. He didn't even think it was cancer. He didn't know what it was. He just had this scab on his nose that wouldn't go away. They did a biopsy. They said it was basal cell carcinoma, an aggressive one. And they told him that what he was going to have to do was get the whole they gave him two options. They said he could either have They could have like precision surgery where they try to remove the specific part of the nose that has the nodules in it, or they could just have the whole tip of his nose cut off. And they recommended the second option because they said it's safer. They were just going to cut half of his nose off. And then they said what they were going to do is they were going to replace that skin with skin from his ear, but it was going to cost at least $20,000. It was going to be a complex and not a risk-free procedure either, because in a lot of cases, even when they do that, the cancer does return because you don't always know where the extra little bits of it might be. So if they don't cut it off in the right spot, they might have left a bit, right? So, he goes through all the options, and he explains here on his page how he goes through the options, and he looks at the medical treatments, and then he finds out about this black salve, and he thinks about it, and he says, well, look, I'm going to try it, right? Because if the black cell fails, I'll just go ahead and do what the doctors are telling me to do. And, you know, he does refer to some material on the internet that he says is a bit scary because some people have had bad effects from black cell. Some people have had large amounts of skin burned off and it's not totally safe, okay? We all know that. But then again, neither is chemotherapy, by the way. A lot of people have died from chemotherapy. So this question of whether it's safe or not should not be the guiding choice. Cancer is not safe. Obviously, if you leave a cancer, it will grow. It'll eventually form metastases in other parts of your body and you'll quite likely die. So there's risks either way. Sometimes cancers do spontaneously go away as well, and that's also very interesting. But anyway, this ointment, the way it's purported to work is it actually seeks out cancerous cells, and the mechanism for how it does that is not well explained, needs to be researched. It's obviously important. I don't think it needs to be suppressed. I don't think that's going to help us understand anything about how to help people, especially when the alternative treatments are so dramatic and so, cutting someone's nose off is not a trivial business, would you say, George?
Yeah, look, I think that a lot of the it's government supporting Big Pharma rather than really taking a rational position as far as herbal remedies are concerned. Not all herbal remedies can be put into a category and said they're not worth worrying about. You should take these pharmaceuticals and use these chemicals and such, and your GP recommends and so on. So I don't believe that all these herbal remedies need to be put into a basket and pushed aside because Big Pharma doesn't agree. I understand that a lot of these applications have in fact been taken up by Big Pharma, repackaged, altered in some way and put out there as XYZ.
Find out how they work, they try to synthesize all the ingredients because exactly for some reason they don't like using natural ingredients. Yeah. You know why? Because they want to patent it. Yeah. And then they want to say, we own that, and anyone else who tries to make anything similar to that is violating our copyright. Yeah. It's corporatism. Again, it's the total control of humanity through corporatism, corporations and government with a revolving door in between.
Unfortunately. What now, I might add just there is one of my daughters, as you know, just recently has come through from chemotherapy and the outcome was quite dramatic. And I've seen that firsthand. That's the second time I've experienced it directly in my family.
Absolutely.
So if there are alternatives to chemo, then certainly that should be done.
Now, let me just run through the history of this particular story. We've only got a few minutes left in the show. But, of course, you can find the article or put it on our show notes. So Bill O'Leary started using the ointment. He followed the directions and he put it on the little scab on his nose. He said within a few minutes it started burning and he really felt a painful sensation. It wasn't pleasant. And he kept putting it on over a period of about 3 days. And what actually happened was, and you can see all the photographs on his page, it went from being this ugly little red sore to after he takes the ointment off after about 3 days, what you see is this kind of white area around the actual tumor. And you can see other little white areas around it, which of course are the secondaries, which of course that's the biggest danger with any form of chemo or surgery is they don't get the secondaries. But interestingly, with the ointment appears to have targeted the tumor because you can see in this photograph from about day three, it's got this white area around the tumor and a couple of little white areas around his nose. And what he does is he smeared it all over the tip of his nose. But the rest of his skin looks still healthy. The skin is pink and healthy. And there's this kind of white lump in the middle of his nose, which is now looks like dying tissue. And then he keeps photographing. He photographs it every day. And gradually, this white lump starts to harden. And it goes, it gets this little kind of hard, dark thing in the middle, which is really a hardened scab. And I'm just scrolling through the imagery now, and it basically turns into a normal scab. And after about 5 days, it starts to come out, and then he actually wakes up one morning, and I'm just getting to that final image here on the page. Here it is. He wakes up one morning and the scab has completely come out of his nose, and there's this kind of perfect little divot in the tip of his nose. Nothing left of the inflamed tissue, and he's got this hard little scab, cancer's completely gone. And then after a few days after that, the rest of his nose starts to close up and heal up, and he ends up with a little bit of a scar on the end of his nose for the rest of his life. But no cancer. I mean, isn't that incredible?
Yeah, it's a little scar's a small price to pay. I think that if I was in his position, I would have done the same to test that herbal. It's got to be called a herbal remedy from the constituents there, because we don't know what the chemical formulas are.
Of course, and of course, I'm not saying this is safe to use. I'm not telling you to go out and use
not
it.
At all.
And you know, anyone who comes at me and says, oh, I'm advertising this product, utter rubbish. I'm not advertising this product.
Yeah, sure.
And that's a totally low-down, cheating way of trying to stop people having free speech in this country, and I won't accept it. So the more they do that, the more I'm going to keep talking about it.
Yeah, we've got the argument on vaccinations, of course, which is quite horrendous, and we've seen many examples over the years. Emphysema medication and heart medication. These pharmaceuticals that have you entrapped for life. And, of course, we've got the ADHD argument and the mental health argument, which is just totally outrageous. So it's to do with Big Pharma. We've got Big Pharma. We've got big security. We've got big agriculture. It's and unfortunately, governments seem to be captive, and we've got client states, as Australia is a client state of America, if I can say that. So we've got situations where there's been an unhealthy relationship between government and major corporation groups, not just one company. These are, we've got banking as well. So you've got cabals, you've got major groupings.
It's monopoly capitalism.
Monopoly capitalism.
And oil, on that course, note, I'm afraid we are going to have to wrap it up. My dear friend George, thank you so much for your contributions today.
Thank you again, Harold. Thank you.
It's been greatly, greatly enjoyed, and I'm sure our audience has benefited from your analysis. You're with Truth News Australia. We'll be back next week. It's been great talking to you. See you then.